Talk to your children about how it feels to make one choice over another. You won the game when you didn't pick that weak boy to be on your team. But how did you feel when you looked at him? How did he feel? Or, your friends asked you to cut school and now you're afraid they'll think you just suck up. But how would you have felt knowing that you weren't where you should be? In spiritual terms, intuition is a subtler faculty than reason. Our hearts tell us when an action is right or wrong, or in some gray zone of doubt. From an early age, you can teach your children to notice if doing something wrong feels bad. Later on, the concept of having a conscience can be introduced. And finally, after age 12 or so, you can begin to discuss the more abstract operations of how actions and results are intimately linked. Recently, the notion of emotional intelligence has come into vogue, and it has been strongly linked to success. Emotional intelligence centers on empathy. It tells us how an action will affect someone else. We feel in advance what they will feel. Choices made on the basis of promoting other people's well-being tend to result in more success than choices made solely out of self-interest. Asking our child, how does that choice feel? And how did it make the other person feel? Is primary to both emotional intelligence and good karma. A critical part of emotional intelligence is learning to delay immediate gratification. Children who learn to be patient are much more successful in life than children who must gratify every whim immediately. Without empathy for another person's feelings, lasting relationships are impossible. Spiritually, emotional intelligence falls under a broader category, however, that of ego boundaries. If you feel that you are an isolated person in time and space, there is no reason to obey any guidance except your own impulses. But if you see that your ego is not the real you, then your self extends without limit throughout all of nature. Then you can afford to act in ways that are altruistic, unselfish, and empathetic, because you realize at the deepest level that you and I are one. There is an overall flow to life that embraces everyone in a larger divine purpose. Teaching children to observe this flow, to see how their life fits into the universe as a single cell fits into the body, is extremely valuable. The lessons of emotional intelligence can be extended far beyond the emotions to the realm of all action and reaction. What we do on this day is to observe our immediate reactions and then ask, is this all there is to a situation? Introduce the notion that every situation contains ingredients beyond what any one person knows. How do other people see the situation? Through these gentle instructions on witnessing how things work, you can make karma very real and concrete.
Wednesday is the day of least effort.
Today we tell our children, don't say no, go with the flow. Wednesday we agree as parents to do the following things with our children: finding the game in at least one task, reducing the effort it takes to accomplish something important, looking for ways nature has helped us. The simple phrase, go with the flow, is actually very deep spiritually. Existence is always new, and yet the temptation is to bring old reactions to it. When we find ourselves resisting anything, we are usually trying to impose an old belief or habit on a new situation. The law of least effort bids us to recognize the newness of life by allowing it to unfold without interference. In the flow, Spirit is already organizing the millions upon millions of details that uphold life, from the infinite processes needed to keep a single cell alive to the vast intricacies of the evolving universe. By connecting with Spirit, we ride this cosmic organizing power and take advantage of it. For many adults, our work ethic holds that more work reaps greater rewards. There are two flaws in this. First, nature herself operates through least effort. The laws of physics dictate that any process, from the spin of an electron to the spin of a galaxy, must function according to the most efficient expenditure of energy, with the least drag. Second, the source of human advancement is always through ideas, inspiration, and desire. There is no amount of work that can force inspiration or desire, or even consistently good ideas. If going with the flow is hard for us, it comes very naturally to a child. They reach for what they want, say what they have to say, express the emotion that rises with the moment. With older children, we can introduce the interrelated ideas of not resisting, putting up no defense, and taking responsibility for how we choose to work. Trying to get your own way is a temptation few of us can resist, but the law of least effort tells us that we can have our way through means other than struggle and conflict. We can follow the flow of spirit, knowing that its infinite organizing power will tend to our wants. When you assume that other people exist to block you from achieving what you want, you have no choice but to constantly defend yourself. Teaching a child that there is a wish-granting power far beyond the power of other people is a valuable lesson. The third element in the law of least effort is responsibility. Each of us is responsible for how we feel, what we wish for, and how we decide to approach life's challenges. The highest responsibility is fulfilled by doing the work of spirit in an attitude of joy and creativity. This is the only way that life without struggle becomes possible. The three activities listed for today center on finding the game in a task, reducing work, and looking for ways nature helps us. The ancient Vedic scriptures of India say that the whole cosmos is a leela, or play of the gods, meaning that this is a recreational universe. By finding the game in even one task today, we teach our children the divine way to approach work. A task that waits to get done until you feel relaxed and comfortable about it is a task well done. The exact opposite of this is perfectionism. Perfectionism is rooted in fear and control. God wants you to enjoy this recreational universe, and the sooner you teach your children that this is all right, the more chance you give them for being successful. Successful people enjoy what they do. Set an example for your children by turning any task, vacuuming the rug, picking up their room, mowing the lawn, into a new game. You can practice a song while taking out the garbage, or make up a poem washing the dishes. Set aside a few minutes for the whole family to concentrate on reducing effort. Talk at the dinner table about situations where solutions have appeared that were much easier than you thought they would be. The whole drift is to diffuse the notion that life is a problem. Often, what's needed is a shift in attitude. Nothing is more efficient than spirit. When you invoke spirit, you have more chance for success than under any other circumstance. Spirit is creative fullness. That is why the Latin word genius also means spirit. In practice, invoking spirit means being in a good mood for work, not straining or putting excessive demands on yourself physically, staying up late, working overtime, not eating and not getting enough fluids, meditating regularly, asking for inspiration, being patient until it comes, not having to have your own way. Review these points at dinner to reinforce the habits you want your children to begin to develop. When spirit does come and help us with a task, its arrival is often silent and unnoticed. Therefore, it's good to start children noticing as soon as possible. Did you get a new idea today? Were you surprised by how easy something turned out that you thought would be hard? Encouraging such an attitude opens the way for inspiration in years to come.
Thursday is the day of intention and desire.
Today we tell our children, every time you wish or want, you plant a seed. Thursday we agree as parents to do the following things with our children. Listing clearly all our desires for the week. Releasing our desires for nature to fulfill. Being alert in the present moment where all fulfillment occurs. Making your desires come true is at the heart of success. And for all of us, how we learn to do that dates from childhood. Desire is a tangled issue. It raises hidden questions about how much we deserve, how good we really are, whether God wants us to succeed, etc. Spiritually, desire is never a negative. We were created as creatures of desire. Without it, we could not want to grow. Other creatures don't have to want to grow because for them the process is genetic. For humans, however, wanting to grow leads the mind towards the source of infinite love, peace, and power that is the very goal of life. Children need to learn that desire is the path to God, and intention is the chief tool on that path. What you intend for yourself determines what you get. The spiritual process that makes desires come true needs to be taught. Lack of success in life is principally due to mental confusion. We fail to notice how deeply conflicted our desires are, causing us to send unwitting, mixed messages to the universe. Someone who wishes for wealth, for example, while also wanting to accept no responsibility for it, is in essence sending a contrary input to the cosmic computer, and usually there is not enough awareness to see this. Nature is giving a response to each wish. It just happens that the wishes are weak, unfocused, and in contradiction with each other. Your children have many levels of desire they may not be aware of, just as adults do. We are all working on big desires that take months and years to be fulfilled, along with smaller desires that take days, hours, and minutes. The more specific your children learn to be with their intentions, the easier they will be able to order their lives, since order belongs in the mind. The three activities listed for today all center on clarifying the mechanics of desire. List or state the desire as specifically as possible. Release your desire to the universe, trusting in the mechanics of creation to bring you a result. Remain alert to the present moment, which is where all results occur. Listing your desires. Today, everyone in the family makes a list of desires for the coming week and posts it on the refrigerator. Begin this activity when a child is 9 or 10. Younger children would just interpret it as making out a list for Santa Claus, since they can't grasp yet what the mechanics of intention are. In guiding your child's list, ask prompting questions such as, what do you most wish for yourself this week? What do you most wish for someone else? You want to avoid the tendency for the list to dwindle into wanting things. For example, a new bicycle, a Nintendo, etc. Point out instead that the universe is always bringing to us a constant stream of results and rewards that stem from our wishes and wants. Not all our desires can come true at once. Each desire has its own season, its own way of coming true. Encourage your child to want happiness and fulfillment as primary desires, but also encourage the sprouting of seeds you see as valuable, a budding talent, to be less shy or better at a certain subject, etc., etc. Releasing your desire. This is not the easiest thing for children to grasp, especially if they have developed the habit of seeing their parents as the source of all things they want. The point is to teach them to want more efficiently. Releasing a desire to the universe is part of being efficient, because making wishes and wants come true is never solely in anyone's power. Success comes from any and all directions. Once you realize this, you can teach your children the principle of patient expectation. The shallow, trivial desires will simply fall away, but those that are sincere and deep will be nourished by nature. Present moment awareness. At any moment of the day, some desire is in the process of coming true. Old seeds we planted and perhaps forgot about are bringing results, mixed in with the beginnings of larger results to come. The point for parents is to make your child aware that the universe, or spirit, or God, is always listening. None of us is alone. We are constantly being heeded. A simple way to remain alert for the universe's response is to keep tabs on the lists you have put on the refrigerator. Ask your children to report on how each desire is coming true throughout the week. You can ask a prompting question, like, "Did anything really nice happen to you today?" and then point out how the answer fits in with the child's list for that week. By being alert to every moment, we receive the results of our wishes. A simple example is happiness. Everyone wants to be happy, but many people expect some epiphany or sudden burst of joy that will last forever. True happiness is not like that. It is a state of well-being that you must be alert to. Younger children do not have the attention span to follow a desire from inception to completion, but they can still be taught that wanting something doesn't have to lead to demands, whining, and general distress if the fulfillment doesn't come immediately. Being attentive to your child's wants, you stand in for nature at this early stage, and young children make a good start in trusting nature later on. Older children are capable of closer and longer observation. They can be taught that desire is a mechanism rooted in the heart. We are led to work for things that bring the deepest fulfillment. Desire thus becomes its own teacher, showing a child how to follow inner guidance. "Is this what you really want?" is an appropriate question to begin to ask in late grade school and remains relevant for life. Divine intervention aligns with human intention when a desire is pure, focused, and in the best interests of a person's spiritual growth. Desires that fail to come true lack one of these ingredients, or else simply need time.
Friday is the day of detachment.
Today we tell our children, enjoy the journey. Friday we agree as parents to doing the following things with our children. Talking about the real you. Showing them that uncertainty can be good. No one has to have all the answers. Teaching them to feel balanced about loss and gain. Enjoy the journey is a positive expression for an idea that isn't popular in our society. For thousands of years, particularly in the East, detachment has been a positive word, connoting the ability to find happiness beyond the play of pleasure and pain. No one has to have all the answers. In the West, however, our intense fixation on achieving material goals has made detachment a negative word, associated with indifference, apathy, and non-involvement. There is no doubt that the Eastern attitude can degenerate into fatalism and a lack of initiative. But in its pure meaning, detachment implies intense involvement, but with surrender of the outcome. A wise man is detached from the drama of the material world because he focuses instead on the source from which all dualities of light and darkness, good and evil, pleasure and pain actually originate. Most of the time, we are tempted to be attached to something, a condition always labeled with me or mine, holding on to my things, my job, my opinions, my pride, and so forth is the result of fear. We fear that the universe is cold and indifferent. Therefore, we contract all our energies around this me that is supposed to protect us. Ego contraction, however, prevents precisely the free expansion that enables you to find your connection to spirit. Childhood is the critical time for learning about the higher self, for this is the period when the ego and all its needs and fears starts to develop. When a child simply succumbs to ego, the whole illusion of I, me, mine takes hold, and it will be painful and difficult to break away from it in adulthood. I-ness can be a sense of oneness with the field of all possibilities. This has been called cosmic ego. Thus, in teaching detachment, you're inviting your children to join you in the cosmic dance. It would be good to say a little more about detached involvement. Throwing yourself with complete enthusiasm into anything you do, but without expecting that you control the outcome. Your responsibility is restricted to the actions you undertake. The outcome is left in the hands of spirit. Detachment is how we show that we leave the larger plan to God. Involvement is how we show that we want to participate in the first place, since nothing can inspire more passion than to be a co-creator with God. The wisdom of uncertainty is a closely related concept. Uncertainty is fearful to the ego, which always wants to control reality. But from the viewpoint of detachment, a constantly shifting and changing universe must remain uncertain. If things were certain, there would be no creativity. Therefore, spirit works through surprises and unexpected outcomes. Fixed outcomes may be something we feel comfortable with, but total fixity would be death. Anything and everything is destined to happen, and our role is to remain open to uncertainty and surprise. The three activities listed for today involve seeing the world in a more detached way through realizing that the real you is spiritual, accepting that uncertainty is inevitable and not to be feared, being balanced about loss and gain. These lessons are just a beginning. Detachment grows on all levels as spiritual life ripens. Altruism and compassion are the natural results of being detached, as is service to others. Replacing pride with humility is a fruit of detachment. So is the condition Christ called being in the world, but not of it. My favorite expression for detachment is that it makes you a citizen of the universe. All of these things are implied in the simple lessons we focus on today. Talking about the real you. Children have a fascination with the otherworldly. Stories of God, heaven, and angels are told to children almost from the cradle. Fairy tales create a world more real than the world around them. With this in mind, parents can talk to their children about the higher self in understandable ways. The higher self is a person's soul, which looks down on all this world with perfect peace and joy. It is our connection to God and heaven, if you choose to use those terms, or to the field of all possibilities. Your higher self is never hurt or confused. It always loves you. It is always near. Children will be reassured to hear these things. To fully identify with the higher self requires meditation, since it is out of the silence of inner awareness that the higher self is known. Gradually, you begin to realize that this self isn't just inside you. It permeates all of existence. The higher self organizes reality by observing, allowing, accepting, and ultimately joining itself with the cosmic intelligence that organizes all of reality. The wisdom of uncertainty. There is always a delicate balance between giving a child security and teaching them that reality can be very insecure. This is a dilemma all parents face, afraid they will err on one side or the other, either instilling false security in their children or going too far in warning them about danger and risk. Spiritually, we have to reconcile both these opposing values to feel safe in a shifting, unpredictable world. Uncertainty can't be wished away. Therefore, it's deeply valuable to come to terms with it, to realize that there is wisdom, the wisdom of a creator who wants to keep reality fresh, new, and ever-moving towards fulfillment. Young children love surprises, and this is the day to fully indulge your delight in surprising them. You need to have no better reason than "I just wanted to do something different." After all, that's the only reason God needs. At older ages, uncertainty can seem to be a problem, since it implies a shifting world that is difficult to cope with. With children of 5 or older, asking if something new is a source of fear is appropriate. All you need is a simple opening like, "I know you haven't done this before. Is it a little scary?" On this day, we can also remind ourselves not to act as if we know everything, as if being an adult means that all questions are settled. Emphasize that there are a lot of answers, and the fun of life is finding out how much you have yet to learn, no matter how much you already know. Accepting loss and gain. No one likes to lose things on any level. Children are as distressed by the death of a pet or the loss of a toy as adults are by the death of a close friend and the loss of a job. Our grief over loss comes from expectation. We expect that having something will make us happier, while not having it will make us unhappier. You can begin to teach your children to look inside for happiness rather than to outside things. To say, "Don't cry, I'll buy you another doll," is just as short-sighted as saying the opposite. "It's your fault for losing it. You're not getting another." Both statements assume that the doll is the source of happiness. You're going to have to decide whether or not to replace something that's been lost. But the larger issue is to point out that the doll doesn't matter. Allow the grieving over loss to occur. You shouldn't stand in the way of emotional expression. But put it in perspective. "I know you feel bad now, but it's only a thing, and you're here for much more important reasons than the things you own or don't own." In this way, the whole issue of loss and gain gets treated at the same time. Detachment is that quality which enables a person to feel unmoved by either loss or gain. Neither affects the higher self. It is always full. It always gets enough love and happiness from its source to satisfy it. Teach this to your child, constantly focusing on the fact that this is the same source of love and happiness that is always available to us. The spiritual journey is an unfolding of how much more secure the higher self is over the individual self.
Saturday is the day of Dharma.
Today we tell our children, "You're here for a reason." Today we agree as parents to doing the following things with our children. Asking each one, "Where are you right now?" Encouraging their unique talents and abilities. Inviting them to perform an act of service. Dharma is a Sanskrit word meaning several things: duty, purpose, and law. In a sense, the day of Dharma is the day of law, the fulfillment of a whole week devoted to spiritual values. On this day, we reflect on how well we have followed spiritual law, how attuned our existence actually is to the harmony of the universe. Today we remind our children, "You are here for a reason." Spiritual law serves us by showing that there is a hidden purpose working for our evolution in every event, every action, every thought. The highest goal in life is to find this purpose and live by it. On this day we measure our success according to how fulfilled the week has been, how much ease and opportunity it has brought, what new inspirations and insights have come our way. The family is a place where you can reinforce that life is always fair. The Dharma ensures this through the force of spiritual law. To say that life is unfair implies that it is random, capricious, and dangerous. In other words, it is without spiritual law. On this day, you can counter all such impressions by showing how fair life really is. And what makes it fair is that we are allowed free will to express ourselves with every ounce of creative power at our disposal. asking, "Where are you?" This question is your way of exploring your child's own idea of his purpose and progress. Where I think I'm going, this is my vision. How I plan to get there, this is my work on the path. How far I think I've gotten, this is my level of awareness. What I think is holding me back, this is my present challenge or lesson. To be complete, Dharma must contain all of these elements. The youngest children have an instinctive purpose, that of being happy. But as soon as a child is old enough to set goals, after 5 or 6, measuring their progress toward that goal is a necessary thing. Where are you? How are things going? Are you getting close to what you want to achieve? If not, why not? With these questions, parents can begin to encourage each child to feel an intimate connection with life's purpose day in and day out. You can also broaden this topic by asking, where are we as a family? You need to teach your children that expressing how they feel about family matters is all right. The same holds for saying honestly if their own personal wishes aren't coming true. No path is without its obstacles. And although an obstacle may feel negative, the law of Dharma tells us that some good is hidden within every block. The ultimate answer to the question, where are you right now, is just where I need to be. To give that answer implies great security, and it is this security you want to reinforce with your children. It is not nature's plan to open up the complete vista, given that surprise and uncertainty are built into the divine plan. Of course, children are easily frustrated when things don't go exactly right, and it is a lifelong process to become patient and make peace with the notion that every person is just where he needs to be. Encouraging uniqueness. Making a child feel unique means making him or her feel uniquely wanted. Having a talent is one thing. Feeling that the universe welcomes it is another. Uniqueness without love is barren and very little different from loneliness. Today you can sit down and list each child's talents, having them participate in order to reinforce the notion that talents are given to us by spirit for our happiness and fulfillment. Performing an act of service. Invite each child to do something kind for someone else, however small the gesture might be. Picking up litter you see while taking a hike, opening a door for an older person, helping younger siblings pick up their room, these are as valuable as charity work. Helping someone else feels good in a way that just doing something for yourself doesn't. This is the kernel of what you want to impart, not just that service is virtuous or makes you look good to others. Serving others fits nicely with the notion that uniqueness is everywhere. When you serve someone else, you have an opportunity to appreciate their worth. When you serve others, you remind yourself of your duty as a loving child of the Almighty. Duty is a synonym for Dharma, and the word covers duty to society, duty to oneself, and duty to God. Your duty to society is to serve others. Your duty to yourself is to unfold spiritually. Your duty to God is to participate in the divine plan for mankind's higher evolution. As parents, we are inviting our children into our own journey, into our sense of purpose, which never ends. Although very young children may not be able to understand what this means in words, your child can easily sense whether you find life exciting and wondrous. Your sense of purpose in the universe speaks far louder than any words. As a parent, what is the one thing you cannot do without? Most people would automatically say love, which is certainly right. We all raise our children according to what we call love, yet today's young people still have horrendous problems. Deeper than love, the one thing you cannot do without is innocence. Innocence is the source of love. Innocence isn't naivete, quite the opposite. Innocence is openness. It is based on a deep spiritual knowledge of several critical issues. Innocence is the knowledge that you can guide children but never control them. You must be open to the person within every child, a person who is bound to be different from you. In innocence, this fact can be accepted with a peaceful heart. Innocence is the knowledge that life is never certain. Your children are guaranteed to go in directions you cannot predict, to do things you would never do. Life is nothing but change. In innocence, you can accept this. You will let go of your need to make your child conform to your preconceived notions. Innocence is the knowledge that love is deeper than surface events. We all want to reach out and teach our children those lessons we found were the hardest to learn. We want to protect them from unnecessary pain. But in innocence, we realize that the surface of life is a distraction from the deeper journey every person must make. This is the journey of soul making. We can help our children realize the all importance of their souls, but we aren't responsible for the journey. This is a unique agreement made between every person and his or her higher self. Innocence is the knowledge that your child is yours and yet not yours. We all grew up belonging to a family, but it is a very loose kind of belonging. Mostly we belong to ourselves, which means to our spirit. Thus, to see a child with real love means to see the spark of the divine, being able to look at a child as a soul embarked on the journey of soul making. This means giving up some deeply imprinted patterns about parenting. From a position of authority, parents have been able to pass judgment, to inflict punishment, and do so with a clear sense of duty and purpose. This recording has laid out a different duty and purpose. You and your child are both souls. You're both embarked on the journey of soul making. The only difference is the roles you have chosen. All souls are immortal, but we choose temporary roles to play. The most good you can do for yourself spiritually is to play your role as a parent with total love, conviction, and purpose. The reason you undertook the role of a parent was ultimately selfish, in the best spiritual sense. This is the role that will uplift and inspire you more than any other. The same is true for your child. As an all-knowing immortal spirit, your child has decided to be a weak, vulnerable infant, totally dependent upon your help. That is the role a child plays, with total conviction and dedication. And yet, both of you are pure souls, equal and as one. Innocence enables you to see this, to play the role and yet go beyond it. I think every parent has had moments when the look in a child's eye told a tale of infinite wisdom, of experiences that go far beyond this particular moment in space and time. I know this has been true with my own children. I've seen my son give me a glance that said, "Here we are again. What an interesting game we are playing this time." I've seen my daughter smile in such a way that I just knew she was on the verge of laughing out aloud at the masks we have put on to keep our roles alive. In those precious glances and smiles, I felt the bond of innocence, which is more powerful than love, because it transcends love. Instead of just being here as a family unit, every family is a communion of souls. We are sailing the seas of immortality together. That is the real bond. When you can see past the role-playing and yet act your role with love and dedication, then I believe you are truly spiritual in your approach to parenting. Finally, the seven spiritual laws are just ways of making this happen. They remind us how to keep the innocence flowing. There's a lot in this world that can destroy innocence and precious little that keeps it flowing. I don't look upon spiritual law as optional. This is how the universe works as it unfolds from pure unmanifest being to the infinite variety of the created world. If you live in tune with spiritual laws, you will be in harmony with the unlimited intelligence of being. As parents, what we teach our children is no different from what we keep teaching ourselves.